You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show this evening. And for those of you who are joining us for the very, very first time, welcome aboard. We're delighted to have you. And I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a great, great habit to get into. We have some pretty important things I need to announce and that you need to be a part of. One of those things has to do with the K-Files e-zine. Now, that's our free weekly newsletter. The free weekly newsletter comes out each Friday. We begin sending it out on Friday night after the show, and it takes several hours to get it all out, but it's free, absolutely free. There is no reason why you should be in the dark. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want. No strings attached. And we don't lend, lease, rent, or sell, or in any other way disseminate our email list, our subscribers list. It's just for us. All right? So you're not going to be spammed as a result. So go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Click on the red letters that say K-Files e-zine and subscribe. This Saturday night is it's the first Saturday of the month, and it's when I normally am in our chat room, and I'll be there. Our chat room is in our members area, and if you're not a member, you need to subscribe. And the way you do that is click where it says about becoming a member. And when you subscribe on a quarterly basis, we're going to send you this DVD. It's called Our Star Wars Reel. It is Ed Grimsley talking with Joanne Richards, and she tells about her husband's role in a secret space program. Very interesting. And we send that to you as a free bonus just for subscribing as a quarterly member. If you subscribe annually, we're going to send you our Star Wars reel. And in addition to that, we're going to send you Ed Grimsley's UFO Wars. So now's the time before we run out of those, all right? The music that you hear on this show is supplied by independent artists. The independent artists, most of them, are at garageband.com and music.podshow.com. So we subscribe to both of those services. If you like the music you hear, go over to those two sites, garageband.com, music.podshow.com. And you will find these artists and you will find their music. And you can just load up your iPod. Most of it is absolutely free. Now, I have been getting some emails from people saying, oh, you know, I can't listen to the show because the video is all messed up. Well, video takes eyes, listening takes ears, it's a radio show, and if the video goes away completely, absolutely completely, oh well, it's a radio show. We just turn the cameras on so you can watch me do the radio show. I recommend you listen to the radio show. And one person said, well, I don't know how you do that, because I had responded. Well, you open up the player that says Windows, and you turn off the video audio and turn on the radio audio. Works real good. All right, we'll be back with David Sirita right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. You know, here on the Kevin Smith Show, we work hard to bring you the very, very best guests that we possibly can. And I'll tell you, tonight is a night when we have achieved the goal. David Sirita is my guest. He was born in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Grew up in California. And while he was growing up, he always wanted to be an astronaut. He was always interested in space and space exploration. Somewhere around 1968, he had his first UFO sighting while he was on his way home from elementary school, and that always burned in his memory. Since that time, he's been a UFO enthusiast. His adult years have been spent in a number of pursuits. All related, he is a filmmaker, a researcher, author, lecturer, and he's a well-known, I guess you could say public speaker, appearing on talk shows like this one. He's well-known all around the world. You probably know him from his films From Here to Andromeda and from his interview with Dan Aykroyd about UFOs. You've probably seen that. And his latest film is called The Voice. He's got a new one in the works, but that's the latest one released, as far as I know. And it's good to welcome you back to the show, David. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Kevin. Actually, my newest DVD will be out in the middle of May. It's called Quantum Communication.
Okay. All right, so Quantum Communication will, in the middle of May, in about 2 weeks, will be your latest film.
Yeah, and that will be shipping, around the middle of May. And it's really a what's that?
I said nothing.
Oh, I'm hearing an echo. Yeah, it's really a film that explores, all of the facets of how communication is happening in the quantum universe and even in the unquantifiable universe. And I've interviewed researchers like, Dr. Gary Schwartz, Harvard, Yale psychiatrist, William Tiller, who was in What the Bleep Do We Know, and he's literally like the godfather and the greatest wizard of studying mind over matter sciences. I'm just so blown away by William Tiller. And Stanislav Ojak, PhD, Bruce Lipton, John Gray, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and a new physicist from MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Cloud Swanson, has come forward with an amazing, book that I'm reading actually right now, called The Synchronized Universe. And his book for me is now like the Bible. I mean, when you start getting deeper and deeper into how consciousness is happening over great distances and circumventing the speed of light limit. And these tests have been done thousands of times. Some of these physicists are just coming forward to go public in this film with 30 years of research behind them in testing on mental telepathy over various distances through various barriers. And I'll get into that in a moment. And finding that no matter what, this new force, we know four forces in physics. We know the strong force, which holds atoms together, the weak force, gravity, and magnetism. But the consciousness force may be the answer to receiving a true message from extraterrestrial civilizations in the end, and also allow us to create a dialogue with the universe on a scale, mathematically calculated, that we can send messages, literally, billions of miles per second at the very least, compared to 186,000 miles per second currently. And this research has been done, like, for example, William Tiller did experiments over even as far as 6,000 miles between a conscious observer who bonds with the energetic space of water, and they take that water sample and they remove it from the person by a distance of 6,000 miles, and then they put that sample of water in a what's called a Faraday cage. So you have wedge shielding, you have all these levels of electromagnetism blocking systems, so that there's no way any radio waves, any type of television or satellite can affect the water. And the telepath will then send the message, and it will arrive there in instantaneous terms over Earth distances, and actually change the pH value of the water as much as one full point, like, for example, going from a pH of 6 to 7, and then they can go down again. And they've done this thousands of times. So then there's another experiment that was done that was described by MIT physicist Claude Swanson to me, where in the 1960s a Russian researcher was measuring body voltage using acupuncture needles and voltmeters on a subject, and he noticed this really large voltage spike just appeared at random out of nowhere. And it turns out when you coincide that spike with satellite time, the sun had just burst an X-class or X-ray class solar flare. 8.3 minutes later, we would see the actual flare hitting the Earth, but the body registered it instantaneously, meaning faster than light.
So you could literally use the body.
Many of these researchers have been doing this stuff for 30 years and have not gone public before about their findings. And that's how conservative they are. And literally, I was told by some of them off camera, and these are PhDs and, you know, physicists, et cetera, many of them, that the government of the United States was funding research into the area of, you know, remote viewing and psychic phenomena and mind over matter, mental telepathy, and psychokinesis, which is the ability to affect an object physically at a distance from the body, that they were so terrified at how powerful the minds of the civilization could become, they actually sent teams from Central Intelligence to stop all research funding, but also to try to debunk the fact that it was really happening.
All right. Now, let me interject a question here. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about the body responded to the solar flare 8.3 minutes before the sensors detected it out in space, but the body responded to it instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
That would imply that the body would be a better detector. You could use it almost like they use seismic instruments. It would be a better detector for solar flare activity than all those instruments they're flying in space.
Yeah, if you can interface the body, plants have done this, water samples have done it, and the human being has done it in regards to the solar flares. In fact, they've known this since the 1920s. There was a scientist in Russia named Alexander Djevsky who noticed that little microorganisms under the microscope would respond instantaneously to an X-class flare. And then, of course, 8.3 minutes later, we find out about it. You know, we actually get the signal. So this has been known since the 20s. But what's amazing about someone, for example, like William Tiller, when he does his action at a distance experiments, what Einstein called spooky action at a distance experiments with water, he's not just sending a thought wave, he's actually physically changing its characteristics, its pH value. And, you know, all this is in my film Quantum Communication, but what it says in the end is that our ability to receive extraterrestrial intelligent signals in the universe lies in this phenomena. It's not going to happen with radio waves because they're way too slow. And it's not going to happen, you know, it does happen on the psychic level. There are many people that are being contacted. In fact, science can even prove that much right now.
But, okay, tell us about that. How does science prove that people are being contacted telepathically?
Well, one of the ways you can do it is the way these signals are, like, for example, if I was an extraterrestrial civilization, and this is really an amazing phenomenon, when you remove your water sample from your subject, who is sending the telepath who is sending the informational consciousness to raise the pH value of the water, what is interesting is nobody anywhere near that water, 9,000 miles away from that person, has any effect on that water's consciousness at all. No interference, no background noise, no crossing signals. It's just like if you ring a cell phone and you're calling somebody in London, England, only their phone rings. Now, once you understand that idea, the inverse of that is that if ET wants to send Kevin Smith a message, your body is a detection system, so they can broadcast an intelligent signal to you faster than light, instantaneously, even from the Andromeda Galaxy, and only you will get the message. And what happens is these messages, you know, are being transmitted at such a high frequency, it is actually beyond the gamma ray spectrum, beyond X-rays and beyond gamma rays. And they actually enter your body, and well, science can measure a signal. A burst of energy has hit your body. What you get, just like when you have a radio, you're broadcasting on the radio right now, you see a radio wave move through the ether, but then all of a sudden when you receive that broadcast, you translate that information, which is the human voice of Kevin Smith and David Sarita right now, and people hear it. Well, it's their body works the same way. When you receive a signal, your body translated into voices, images, and pictures, and moving pictures. So a lot of the visions we get in behind sleep and in meditation, and even in the middle of the night, I believe some of the ET contact abduction experiences are happening on this other dimension. Some of them are not happening in the full physical dimension, but they're real. They're real in the sense that a message was sent intentionally to that person. And they did receive the pictures in their mind's eye, and they saw it in their dream, or they saw it as a 3D hologram. And that is a real communication. And what scientists are starting to find out at MIT and also, you know, some of these other research facilities, even Gary Schwartz and his lab at Tucson, is that there are new scientific instruments that are interfacing with living plant tissue. They're even using fly larvae. They're using all kinds of different biochemistry to interface with technology to detect phenomena in the universe and intelligent signals in real time, which means instantaneously over any distance. And that is where this science is going. And one of the things I'm trying to do, I mean, I started out with my interest in UFOs and practicing meditation for 30 years, and I'm starting to see that there's this whole other area of research, like I covered in my film, The Voice, and I'm covering in my new DVD, that all of these university scientists all over the world, actually, including in Russia, are working in this area of the mind-consciousness sciences. And I think they're the ones who, when they make the leap in understanding from doing just human and animal and plant communication, that we can actually transpose this research into the extraterrestrial arena. And many of them have already made that leap. And these are people that that have literally gone against the grain of modern establishment and the fixed idea that there's only four forces and that's all we know. I mean, these scientists are way ahead of the curve on what we're hearing in mainstream media. So, again, I believe therein lies the answer.
All right. You've been talking about the speed at which this communication will take place, and you know, that brought to my mind something that I've said very often here, and that it has to do with SETI. Now, I'm not opposed to SETI. I think that it's valid science, and they ought to keep doing it. On the other hand, I have said, I don't really think that ETs are going to be using radio waves. I don't think they're going to use radio, because if they are traveling at the speeds they have to travel to get from where they are to where we are, if that's what they're doing, radio is not fast enough. They would be outrunning their signal.
Yes, current radio technology is way too slow. And I'll give you an amazing example. You know, if you take your cell phone and you go into an underground parking garage and you lose the call,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, the difference between mental telepathy experiments at any distance, in fact, even Edgar Mitchell, when he was coming back from the moon, did a mental telepathy experiment with cards, the Zeno cards, and he had several psychics on the ground trying to receive the sequence in the Zeno cards that he was sending. And two of them got 52 sequences correct. And he took his data and his information to the government, and there was no interest. So what he proved was the accuracy of mental telepathy over space was even more powerful than it was on Earth. But the point is, when you have barriers, electromagnetism, which is light or radio waves, for example, when it goes and it hits a wall or it hits steel and it hits lead, the signal gets very, very weak. And the quality of the signal of an electromagnetic broadcast gets weaker, square the distance from the transmission source. So if you're transmitting a song, you know, a Beatles song on the planet Earth, and you're sending it out into space, the further it gets away from the Earth, the weaker the signal gets. It's still there, but it gets more and more and more and more faint. Well, the difference between consciousness and the psychic force measured scientifically is, regardless of distance or barriers, electromagnetic barriers like aluminum lead and you know, even mountains of rock make no difference and have no effect on it at all. And with that, in gravity is the same. Gravity, it weakens to a certain degree by squared of its distance from the source. So, example, the Earth has a gravity field, but the further you get out into space, that field gets weaker and weaker and weaker, and the closer you get to it, the stronger it gets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the psychic force measured scientifically in the lab over 30 years, thousands and thousands of times through multiple barriers, multiple targets, does not get weaker. It can go through anything. And so, once again, to answer your question, why would ETs broadcast on a radio wave when it encounters bears and it deflects off asteroids and this planet and that planet and that star? I mean, trying to go across the whole galaxy, the distortion factor is going to be enormous. So that's not how they're doing it. But and what's exciting is this is almost vindication for all the people who receive telepathic messages from extraterrestrials, or they're having contact behind sleep or in the middle of the night, is that that's the way the signal is broadcast the most successfully. Now, science is going to be able to, in the future, according to these researchers, actually be quantified in a mathematical model as a force, as a new force. That is the goal of my film, Quantum Communication, to actually demonstrate that there is a powerful case being built for the psychic force being a new force, and that it is actually going to be able to be quantified. And that means we'll be able to use technology to receive signals and actually put them into pictures. That is where all this is going. So,
okay, David, when we have to take a break in just a few seconds, but when we come back, can you talk to us a little bit about the research that's going into what you were just talking about, taking this concept all the way to technology? And we'll get into that when we come back. All right, folks, I told you, I promised you this would be good. And we're nowhere near where we're going with this, so you want to be sure that you call all your friends and neighbors and tell them to tune in as well, all right? And if you have someone who absolutely hates UFOs and extraterrestrials and they really ridicule you all the time, do them a favor. Tell them to call and tune in, and who knows, maybe they'll learn something. We'll be back right after this. And And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is David Cereda. And David is talking with us about quantum communications. David, you were talking about how to turn this idea, this concept, into technology. Who's doing the research on that?
Well, there are a number of Americans doing the research on it, and I think, you know, all of them are some of the best in America are appearing in my film. But William Tiller has been working in this area for over 35, 40 years. But also Gary Schwartz. Let me tell you a story there before I go back to William Tiller. And he, last November, I had this experience where, and I have been seeing invisible beings, you know, through the practice of meditation now for about, since 1994, I've been seeing them on a regular basis. And one night I woke up, my wife was, you know, telepathically contacting a particular group of, you know, human form extraterrestrials that we believe are friendly. And I didn't know what she was doing. And she was asking about our dog, Noah, if Noah could go aboard the spaceships when they come. And they are allegedly connected with Jesus Christ. And I'm convinced that that might be true. So I felt safe with this and being a Christian. And then all of a sudden I wake up and I see these basketball orbs, one burnt orange and turquoise, and there's three of them, and they're spinning around my wife's head. I can actually see this with my eyes open, crystal clear. And I went, oh, my God, like, you know, these are like the giant orbs people see on their cameras, but they're three-dimensional, and they're spinning around her head like bees, and they're zipping all over the place, really curious about, you know, whatever she's asking them, and they go shooting through the ceiling. So, and I fall back asleep, and my head goes down, and I'm dreaming about spaceships way above the clouds above Sedona. Well, that was in November, this past November, and I go to this conference months later, the Eric Pearl Reconnection Conference in Hollywood, and Gary Schwartz, who's a Harvard-Yale psychiatrist, is giving a lecture there about healing, but also about he was approached by the United States military because they had a super-cooled, ultra-infrared-sensitive video camera that they started seeing phenomena on that they could not explain. And I told Gary about the experience I just shared with you, and he said, David, you know, that was November. He goes, you better come to my lecture. There's nothing I can tell you but just come to my lecture. And sure enough, Gary was using this camera that he first demonstrates some of the photography, the videography from, and you can see the human hand is glowing like with light, and it's very, very sensitive. You can see that the human body emits an auric energy, an odic field of energy, very clearly. And then they do this experiment where they point it at this woman's head. Just like my wife, she was talking to extraterrestrial, you know, beings. And as she's channeling these beings, this basketball-sized orb guy, this is in black and white motion picture, infrared, comes flying around her head in the same size and the same type of movements I had described to Gary, which is why he was so excited about me coming to his lecture. And I was just flabbergasted. I just couldn't even believe what I was seeing. I was going, this is video confirmation of the exact same size and same behavior of beings I was seeing. And then you start putting, you know, it all comes crashing together. You see the basketball-sized fuzzy orbs that appear in crop circles that people believe are making the crop circles, and some people believe they're from the, you know, the star system of Arcturus, and other people believe they're from other star systems. But nevertheless, I mean, these orbs, these glowing balls of plasma light have been captured on film and video in crop circles. In fact, in William Gazecki's film, Crop Circles, The Quest for the Truth, you can see this young boy on a tractor in the UK, and this orb just comes buzzing by him, and he just falls asleep after this thing comes by him. And they interviewed him about it, and he said, you know, what happened to you? This orb was right next to you. What did it look like? He said, I just got really sleepy, and he passed out. So these things seem to have an effect on consciousness and putting the brain into possibly a deep theta or meditative state just upon their presence and their arrival. But now we see that this super-sensitive military camera can see them when they're not in the visible light spectrum, when they're fully invisible, but they're really there. So that's kind of an example of some of the technology. But when you get into, you know, back to William Tiller, some of the sensors and technology he is developing, I believe there is there's a strong case where these things can be used. And again, some of them are bio-living tissue interface with electronics as sensors. And they are literally pointing some of these things at, for example, when you see the star system of Sirius in the night sky, you're seeing it where it was 8.7 light years ago. You're not even seeing it where it really is today. Now, when you mathematically calculate where that star really is today, you just see a bunch of black space. But when you point these new sensors at the real-time position of the stars, they get a signal. And this is being done in Russia by Konstantin Korotkov, who is also in my DVD. He is a professor of physics and has sponsored numerous other PhDs. And he has developed, I mean, really exciting, you know, technology. For people who have already seen my film, The Voice, the new human aura camera that can see the whole human aura and all of the information inside of the auric field in 3D, and that is his invention as well. So the technology is there, and it's all being used in the human and animal and plant and other living organisms' consciousness arena right now. But, you know, again, I'm really excited about what this will mean for detecting intelligent extraterrestrial signals.
What will it mean in terms of being able to actually communicate with extraterrestrials? Like right now, if we want to communicate with an astronaut in space, they sit down at a radio and a microphone and speak, and it transmits a signal, and it's received on the space station or on the shuttle by technology there. Is there any development toward being able to sit down and either at a keyboard or a microphone communicate with these extraterrestrials using this quantum communications?
Well, I think there definitely is, and that is an area where funding is needed to, you know, develop more laboratories for specifically for those type of experiments. Because, for example, what they do in remote viewing is you get a blind target, and the remote viewer will get a set of numbers, and they'll go into an envelope which may be longitude, latitude coordinates, or they may just be a picture. And, you know, over thousands of tests, the amount of success that remote viewers have in sometimes seeing even future or past targets is very, very, very good. But now when you get a target that is a distant civilization, for example, possibly the Pleiades, possibly, you know, Andromeda Galaxy, possibly, you know, the Orion Belt system, you can start targeting some of these star systems. And when you have, for example, you take 10 remote viewers, and none of them even know what the target is. And you get 100 remote viewers, and none of them know the target is Orion's Belt. And they start receiving messages, and when they share the messages, if more than even 5% of them are getting the same message, that has to mean something that cannot be ruled out as a coincidence. And, in fact, it goes very similar for Native American Indian shamans. They have these conferences all over the country where they share their dreams, and when two or more of them have the same dream vision, they take it very, very seriously. So it's kind of like ruling out odds of chance, and when you see that kind of consistency. And that's one of the ways, you know, that it can be done now. But when you use these actual sensors, you use these invisible cameras. This particular camera Gary Schwartz talked about was built for the Air Force by Mitsubishi. It was a $700,000 camera, and, you know, there's only two of them in the world. So it does take money to be able to do this properly, and then quite a bit of money. But I think spending billions of dollars on SETI at this point is not going to yield anything. So, you know, I would like to see some funding go towards some of these researchers who are all PhDs, and and scientists and doctors that really deserve a chance. I mean, if we really want to make contact with extraterrestrials, this is probably, I think, the best bet. But if we don't, and we just want to throw money away at SETI, well, then so Seth Shostak can tell us, you know, another decade has gone by and they haven't found anything. I mean, you know, we're welcome to do that, too. I know Spielberg has spent and donated a lot of money to SETI, and, you know, there's really nothing there.
Well, I say again, it just seems illogical to me that if we assume that we are not alone in the universe, if that's our starting point, we think we're not alone in the universe, and then we add to that the size of the universe and the tremendous speeds at which any spacecraft would have to travel, even if it's going through a wormhole, it would have to travel at very significant speeds to traverse the universe and get here from wherever. When you put that into the mix, and you know the speed of a radio signal, then you got to say they're not using radio. They could not possibly be using radio. It takes 28 minutes whenever NASA sends a signal from Earth to one of the rovers on Mars. 28 minutes for that to get there. And that's not very far away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they cannot do real-time remote driving of those things. They have to stop them and use their cameras and look around and have conferences about where they want this thing to go next. And then they write a program, and they send the data up to the rover, and it receives the data, and that data tells it where to go, how far to go, and you go this far, and you turn left so many degrees, and then you go so far and hang a right so many degrees. I mean, it's very, very tedious, meticulous work. They cannot do real-time remote driving of the rovers. And the reason is because it's radio. So you would
exactly.
have...
Exactly. I mean, I can tell you one of the most exciting things William Tiller told me on camera. And I was so blown away by this as I drove away from, you know, the facility where I filmed him. I just couldn't even believe what I was hearing. And here's kind of the synopsis, you know, and it comes in two parts. I asked him a question about our sun as we're approaching solar maximum this time. NASA is expecting some whopping solar flares as we come into 2010 and 2012. The sun right now is in a solar minimum cycle, and we've lost all sunspot activity for 5 months. I wrote David Hathaway at NASA and had a dialogue with him this week about it. And another thing they noticed is the sun, the Earth's magnetic field is collapsing towards zero. And at the current rate of collapse, it'll take 2,000 years for Earth's magnetic field to collapse. The Earth's magnetic field is a great part of what protects us against solar flares and all sorts of, you know, once in a while you get gamma ray bursts from distant stars.
We have to take a break, David. We'll be back right after this. We'll pick up right there with the information about the sun and what's happening with the sun. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, David Sirita. David, you were talking with us when we had to go away for break about the activity on the sun.
Yeah, and we'll see how that relates to human consciousness very shortly. Anyway, David Hathaway at NASA, and I was trying to get clear with him about what is actually going on the sun, you know, what it means in 2012 and all sorts of things, and I got some very clear answers. And one of them I mentioned is that, you know, as we approach 2010, 2012, somewhere in there, NASA's expecting a possibility of very, very large solar flares. And if we got a direct hit from one of these flares, it could cause trillions of dollars in damage to electrical systems. It could take a decade or more to repair all the transformers and restore power, and there could be a lot of fires. And there's no doubt that there's a high level of danger. But also, 2,000 years from now, our Earth's magnetic field will have collapsed. So between now and then, which is, of course, the same distance between when Jesus walked on the Earth and now, we're looking at something even worse than that, and that is when the field of the Earth collapses, the ability of the planet to defend itself from solar flares will diminish. Other than the ionosphere and the atmosphere, we won't have much left to defend ourselves. And that could mean, real disaster. But now, when we see the idea that the human body, plants, and water can receive messages from the sun, scientifically demonstrated, instantaneously, faster than light, and that it responds by sending a signal into human consciousness, plant consciousness, and water, which is really alive. So you're looking at living systems, living aqueous, meaning watery systems, can receive these messages. Now, inverse to that, what if we, I asked Dr. Tiller, I asked him, could we collectively, through mass media, through radio shows and television, assemble millions to even a billion or so minds to focus on the sun as we approach 2010 and ask it to be quiet? And ask it to not destroy us with solar flares. Would anything happen? And he looked at me, Dr. Tiller, and he kind of had this glow in his eyes, and it's like he knew something that I couldn't even imagine, that what he was going to tell me. And there's two levels of what he was going to tell me, and one of the levels was he almost circumvented my question and went to something that, superseded it, and that is that he said, where he has seen evidence, where consciousness interfaces our reality, is even smaller in wavelength than the quantum universe. When we consider that an X-class flare, how much damage it would do to the sun, and we actually do simple equations, see in Einstein's formula, equals mc squared, energy electromagnetism is equal to mass times the speed of light squared. So you look at, energy is equal to mass times the speed of light squared is the formula of converting energy as a form of electromagnetism and also converting it back into mass physical energy. Well, X-rays are electromagnetic energy, and when they hit the physical structure of the Earth, they exhibit physical strong forces, and they're very, very devastating. When a gamma ray burst comes from a distant star system, if it were to hit our planet directly, it would produce more energy, according to NASA, than the sun does in its entire lifetime. So just think of how much energy that would be physically, transforming from electromagnetism, gamma rays, and then back into physical matter and just clobbering our planet. Well, that does happen from time to time. There are gamma ray bursts, but we haven't had a direct hit by one, at least not in a very, very long time. Now, consciousness, according to Dr. Tiller's research and his theory, actually interfaces with reality at something even more powerful than gamma rays, and that is the magnetoelectric spectrum. The magnetoelectric spectrum, when consciousness transmits energy at the magnetoelectric spectrum, it sends energy the speed of light squared, which is the speed of light times itself, which is an enormous, enormously fast propagation of information. When we move our consciousness into a coherent, realized heart chakra, the heart center, he says the energy and electromagnetism interface of consciousness is the speed of light cubed, which is times itself and then times itself, which is three multiples. When you convert that type of energy into a physical mass environment, the effects it would have on the physical reality is so powerful that it makes that gamma ray burst hitting the planet or these X-class flares seem as if they're child's play. And that, at that level of consciousness, he said human beings, when they learn how to make their mind so coherent, all of the brain waves, all of the atoms in their mind so coherent, they become like gods. Just as Jesus Christ told us, you will do greater things than I. You will become like gods when you learn how to reach these levels of realization. So the idea of reducing solar flares is nothing compared to what we're capable of. Now, one of the things I learned from many of these scientists is the government in the 1970s and 80s, when they shut down all the funding for these programs on mind over matter research, did everything they could to debunk it because they didn't want us to develop our minds at this level. They realized the potential mathematically that consciousness was part of the equation of the physical structure of not only the planet but the solar system and the universe. It was in 1927 at the Fifth Solvay Conference on Quantum Mechanics that Einstein was approached by whom would be two other Nobel Prize winners, Niels Bohr and Heisenberg. And they came to Einstein and they said, it looks like the minds of the researchers are affecting the results of the experiments. And Einstein rejected the idea initially, and it took him 10 years later to reverse his decision and say, anyone who becomes seriously involved in the pursuit of science becomes convinced that a spirit is manifest in the laws of the universe, a spirit vastly superior to that of man. A spirit is not a force. It's not one of the four forces, gravity, magnetism, strong and weak force. A spirit is consciousness, which is what these physicists are now calling, in quantum communication, the next force. Physicist Cloud Swanson from MIT calls this realization. Really, it's not new. Scientists knew in the beginning of quantum mechanics. Max Planck is the godfather of quantum mechanics. And even he said that the same thing that Einstein said, that mind is the matrix of all matter. Consciousness tells everything what to do. And what Cloud Swanson said at MIT on camera the other day is that what they realized is that whenever you had an observer in a quantum experiment, the mind of the researcher would collapse the wave function of the observation. So they had to sequester the experiments behind Faraday cages, meaning lead shielding and other shielding, so that the minds wouldn't affect the results of the experiments. They've known this forever, since the 1900s. So our minds are that powerful. So what they realized is we can't tell people how powerful their minds are. We got to keep them distracted. We've got to keep them in chaos. And what happens is when you don't realize, even what Jesus said in the mustard seed, that you reap what you sow, that your mind is so powerful you will do greater things than I, was that if your mind became coherent and you didn't doubt everything, like, you know, how do I attract my soulmate, which is another thing we talk about in the film. How do I manifest my teachers, my business partners? How do I manifest greater knowledge in my field of study or my career? You know, I may be a medical doctor, and I'm looking for the cure for AIDS. How do I create a dialogue with the universe to get that? Well, if you don't believe the universe is intelligent, you won't create a dialogue with it, and you won't get the answer. If you don't believe that your thoughts are a great power, you'll have a great thought, and then you'll go, no, that can't happen. And that's what we do because we haven't seen the scientific proof that our minds are that powerful, so powerful the government was afraid of it. And that is where this is all going.
We have a break coming up in about a minute and 30 seconds. Let me ask you this. You said that the government was afraid of this. Are they still afraid of this, and are they going to attack people who start learning the secrets?
Well, just look at the current situation with the swine flu. The ordinary flu kills 1,000 people per year. We have, you know, granted it is a situation, but there's no doubt that the pandemonium of fear helps accelerate the virus's power over us. I really believe they don't want you to know how powerful your mind is. They try to keep making more and more and more violent movies in Hollywood, more and more meaningless, you know, blabber on television. They don't want you to know this stuff, and in fact, there have been direct assaults and attacks on the research itself to a level on television that it has reached major, like, for example, I think it was Ted Koppel and Nightline that did a special on remote viewing, and he got a member of Congress to say on television that they realized that it didn't work. Well, that wasn't true. That was a paid-for assault on the research and the researchers because they didn't want you to know how powerful your minds were. They wanted to make fun of it.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. More really interesting stuff from David Cereda. Don't go away. Welcome back. My guest is David Cereda. We will open the telephone lines in just a few minutes, but I want to continue talking with David here for a moment, or actually listening to David. David, you were telling us about the Ted Koppel special on remote viewing and that he got a member of Congress to say it didn't work and that's why they shut it down, and you said that wasn't the truth. How do we know that wasn't the truth?
Well, Claude Swanson, who, you know, being that he has a PhD in physics from MIT, in his book, The Synchronized Universe, tells a story where President Jimmy Carter, in the 1970s, there was a case where there was a missing Russian Tu-22 bomber that was lost, and no satellites, nobody could find this thing. And he decided to use remote viewers, and they used several of them, and they cross-checked each other, and they delivered a set of longitude-latitude coordinates. The latitude-longitude coordinates were given to the military, who then looked on their satellite cameras, which led them to the jungles of deep Africa, deep jungle territory, and there was the Russian Tu-22 bomber. So Carter spoke about it, and then, only years after him, Congressman Charles Rose, who was the House chairman of the Subcommittee on Intelligence and Oversight, reviewed the remote viewing program himself, and he actually said that, you know, given the data and given the accuracy of what's going on here, this is not chance. There is photographic evidence for what these remote viewers were seeing. And then he warned us that if we canceled the program and the Russians were doing this and we weren't, we would be in serious danger. So there's your proof. But then, you know, going back into the idea that, you know, mind over matter scared the government. They didn't want us to know how powerful our minds were. So there was a big smear campaign on television and the media to say that, yeah, we researched the subject and it's interesting, but it's not really that powerful, that it was all a lie. It reminds me of, you know, you go back to the time of Christ, and what was very unique about Christ, even over a Muhammad, is that he was telling us we could attain this enlightenment ourselves. We will do greater things than him, even though that isn't true, but we will do things that are unimaginable with the powers of consciousness. We can raise the dead, heal in God's name. We could, you know, we could do all these same things, which his disciples did, by the way. So he proved it in his lifetime, in his generation, that in the life of Christ in the resurrection, that we could become very powerful. And I think that's what scared the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire didn't want people becoming enlightened themselves. They wanted people to worship the structure and the civilization, and the authority was in the military and in the Roman Empire. They didn't want everyone attaining powers of the mind. And so I think that's one of the motivation factors to crucifying Christ. In the same way, when the lives of the great saints, even in the Catholic Church, many of the saints were, like Joan of Arc, were burned at the stake for telling that she was receiving visions of God, and Saint Bernadette of Subaru, and then there's Saint Teresa of Avila, who said she met Christ in person, and she was told that it wasn't happening, yet later they make them saints. My point is that now that we have literally 30 years or more of scientific data that thousands of experiments demonstrate from many different researchers. In fact, according to psychologist Al, I think his name is Hisink in the UK, he actually spoke out about this, that if 30 universities have studies confirming the powers of the mind, mental telepathy, and action at a distance, then this cannot possibly be a mistake, that we need to pursue this research. And so now, today, what we do in America is we make fun of psychic phenomena by, for example, Chris Angel, Mind Freak, does all this magic in Vegas, and everyone in the beginning thought he was doing real, he had real mind powers, but in the end he tells everybody that he doesn't believe in telepathy and the powers of the mind because he can prove it all wrong because it's all magic. That is also a subversive smear campaign on the psychic phenomena and the powers of the mind.
Well, see, the same sort of thing has been around for centuries. I mean, you had the whether people believe it or not, the story is there, and it's a very ancient story, where Moses stands in front of Pharaoh, and he throws down the wooden staff that he's got, and it turns into a snake, and then he takes it up again, and Pharaoh's magician throws his down, and it also turns into a snake. To prove which one was real, Moses threw his down, and his staff becomes a snake again and eats the other one. And you've always got detractors, and you know, anything that happens in reality can always be matched pretty closely with special effects. And you know, I to me it doesn't disprove anything, but I agree with you, it is an attempt, I think, to discredit and disprove things.
Well, when Moses parts the Red Sea with the assistance of God, and we think that, you know, this, how much scientific evidence we have today, for example, in William Tiller's lab, that consciousness can raise or decline the pH value of water at any distance, then of course the mind of God could manipulate the waters. And that power and that dialogue existed between Moses and God. So when we see miracles like that today, we think, you know, that must have been science fiction. But what if the power of consciousness is that profound that these things can really happen? Well, we're starting to see the scientific proof that it is.
Let me ask you a question, and then I'll tell you where I'm going with it. Are you a religious person?
Well, I am. I'm a Christian mystic Catholic. I was baptized Catholic by birth.
Okay.
I believe in the Catholic saints, and I believe Jesus Christ is exactly whom Jesus said he is. So, but I also believe that the religions of the Buddha and the religions of Krishna and Radha and the, you know, Far Eastern religions, I respect them. And that's not my job to judge any of them. That is simply not something that has any merit to go around judging other religions. But I've done a lot of studies in religion, too, but yeah.
Okay, now let me tell you where I was going with this. I'm not a religious person, mm-hmm. but I read very widely, and I tell people, I usually say it this way, I'm not religious, but I'm also not stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, I recognize when I read things if there is the ring of reality to it. And I think that a whole lot of what gets tossed out by folks who are not religious, a lot of stuff that gets tossed out probably needs to be tossed out because it's not in the book. It's in books of theology, it's in church doctrines, it's in man-made stuff, but it's not in the original script. And we've talked a lot about consciousness here, and you've mentioned Jesus several times, so here's where I was headed. If people look in the New Testament, and they look in the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 1, it says, it's translated into English this way, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God." And then you start asking yourself, okay, in the beginning was the Word? Now, what kind of sense does that make? That really makes no sense. Well, it happens, I read Greek, and so I checked it. And, of course, it's in Archaea and Halagos. In the beginning was the Logos. It gets translated Word. But the Greek word for Word is not Logos, it's Rhema.
Mm-hmm.
So I did some research to find out what did the Greeks What concept did they have in mind when they used logos? And in modern English, the concept they were talking about, we would translate it today as consciousness. In the beginning was the consciousness. The consciousness was with God. The consciousness was God. And then it goes on to say that all things were made by this consciousness, and apart from him or the consciousness, there was nothing made that was made. The only thing that created anything was this consciousness. And then it goes on and says, and the consciousness became flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory. And I looked that up, and it says glory is not, you know, we usually think of almost like an aura, something shining around someone. And that's not it. It uses a marketplace term, doxa. Doxa is the word for the weights that you put on the scales. On the one side, you put your product that you're buying. On the other side, you put weights. And you keep adding doxa until the number of doxa, the weight of the doxa, equals the product that you have over there.
Wow.
Okay. And so when it says, we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, what it says is we beheld his value.
Wow.
And it's all talking about consciousness being made flesh and therefore should be understandable to us.
See, that fits in with what the modern physics is leading towards, the conscious universe, that when you see these examples on the small scale of mind over water or hydrogen, for example, and then you go to the first book of the Bible, Genesis, you come to Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, and God moved God's Spirit over the face of the waters, and then there was light. Well, that's really interesting because the sun is made of the same stuff we are. It's made of over 90% hydrogen, minerals, and trace oxygen. And it has helium because it manufactures it. We are made of over 90% water, minerals, and carbon. So we're almost the same stuff. The interesting thing is the only difference is the set of instructions on how this would arrange itself, this hydrogen would arrange itself. In fact, hydrogen was born as little as 10 seconds after the Big Bang, and for the Big Bang theorists. And now that we know that hydrogen has memory, consciousness, and that God moved God's Spirit over that, and then there was light, well, the sun produces light, and it's made of hydrogen. And it actually fuses hydrogen to make helium, and then it manufactures all these other little minerals, which eventually become the stuff of planets and you know, galaxies. So it's really amazing. I loved your translation and how pure that was. You're right. The English language really distorts the original word. But also, logos, meaning consciousness, in the beginning was consciousness, is consistent with Genesis. But now, what physicists are discovering is the great power in the universe is not energy. Because if energy doesn't have information, it doesn't do anything with it. Information, which is instructions attached to energy, tells energy to move through the information to cause creation to happen. There's a whole section in my film, Quantum Communication, where I'm looking for the original language of the universe. You go into the oldest languages in history, and then you start measuring. NASA records the sounds of all the planets, the sun, and in fact the Earth itself. And you start to see these tonal qualities that are permeating the solar system and the universe that our consciousness probably tuned into, which then created that into tonal languages. So when God says in the beginning there's consciousness and then there's the word, the logos is in Greek is actually the conscious word. It's kind of like putting consciousness into form in its original purest sense. So it causes energy, consciousness, to then go into vibrational tonalities, which then cause creation to happen.
It's interesting that you said vibrational.
Thomas Aquinas, who said that I can think of no saint that would disagree with the fact that the angels' voices are causing the stars and the planets to maintain their orbits and actually causing them to exist. And that is consistent with science. I mean,
is
that there's a divine personality called an angel, you know, I don't know. But we can see everything. You can get as close to that scientifically as you can.
All right. Now, you said it caused that it's a vibrational quality. And when you go back to Genesis, when it says the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters in Hebrew, it is the wind or the breath of the gods vibrated upon the face of the waters.
Well, that's even better.
And I'm going to give you, you and I are speaking at the same conference in May. We're up in Sedona for the...
Oh, you're going to be there. Oh, yeah. Great, at Ed Grimes' conference.
I'm going to give you my 2-CD set. You need to watch, because it's called Gods in the Garden, and this is what it's, the things we're talking about at this moment are what it's all about. Now, that whole vibration, okay, you have the wind of God or the breath of God vibrating on the face of the waters, and this is a creative force. This is, I don't know if force is a good word, but it is a creative process. All right, this whole thing has to do with frequency and vibration, and consciousness, I think, all has to do with frequency and vibration. I think that whenever we think a thought, there is a wave set in motion at some level. And a wave is a frequency, is at a frequency, and a wave is a vibration.
Well, that's actually true. I mean, when William Tyrrell was telling me that consciousness interfaces with reality at a level of energy that is above the gamma ray spectrum, and when you consider the magnetoelectric and beyond, there are many dimensions of this consciousness. When that consciousness with that much it's not electromagnetism, it's higher than electromagnetism. When that interfaces with matter, it literally obliterates planets and stars in energy levels. So if it's put into a form of intelligence to give order, it gives birth to planets and stars and galaxies with absolute ease. And what he's saying is that you eventually, human beings, it may take, you know, billions of years of incarnations or our vibrations, you know, perpetuating throughout the universe, we will become like gods, just as Jesus said. So I love your translations. It'd be great if you could email me some of those, especially the one from Genesis, because it really fits in with the search for the original language of the universe being a breath and a vibration. I mean, one of the things we did is we took the NASA actual sound of the sun from deep space, which normally you cannot hear. It's similar to the unutterable, you know, name of God for the ancient Hebrews, you know, with the four letters and no vowels, so you can't enunciate it. But as soon as you compress the sun waves enough, then it becomes audible to the human ear as a deep resonant hum, just like the ancient Hindus called the sound of Om. The true sound of Om is the sound of the sun. It is the sound of the universe, or what the Zen masters call the sound of one hand clapping. So that original breath and vibration that you're saying is the translation of the ancient Hebrew, the correct translation, is so consistent with the sound vibrations of the planets and the stars that you can see that there is a language, a cosmic kind of language going on, and we can actually tune into that and participate in that. And if we reach these levels of consciousness, we become super creators, and we can change. I mean, maybe like a game of chess, God, you know, the creation says, let's make the sun, you know, do this radical thing where it's going to lose its magnetic field and there's going to be solar flares that could destroy the human race. Let's see if they figure this out. And if they figure it out, you graduate. If you stop, you know, this global media that says this isn't happening, there's no powers, you guys don't have any powers, just keep worshiping us, and all of our violence and all the things we want to show on television, it's all about violence, sensationalism, and fear. Why don't we say, let's get all this global media to focus everybody on the sun and see how powerful our minds really are. And if we can avert a hurricane, which is made of water droplets and vapor, and if God's consciousness can create a star with this mind power, our little brains, billions of them together, can certainly move a hurricane. And if we can do that, and then we can avert solar flares, then it's like, okay, great, they graduated. Now I don't need to play this game with them anymore. They're going to survive. That's what I hope happens as we approach 2012, not focusing on doom and gloom. Yeah, we can see these things coming, but we can collectively assemble our minds and do this great deed.
Let me say this, and then we'll open up the telephone line. If people sort of doubt, they sort of look at what you're saying and say, well, it sounds good, but I don't know. Okay, here's the flip side of that, folks. Just look at where we are right now at this point in history on Earth. Look at everything. All of the massive disasters and predictions for further massive disasters, bigger cataclysms, and all the wars and the disease and the breakdown of our ecosystem. You look at all of this and just understand we are exactly where we've been thinking. We have, nobody else produced this, we did. And so it has to be a result of the way we've been thinking. So if that is the case, flip that over and think a different way. And what could we produce? I want to open up the telephone line and allow folks to give us a call. If you have a question or a comment, we want you to be able to call in and make your comment or ask your question. The telephone number is 602-539-9580 or toll-free 888-223-4599, 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. You can send it by going to my website. Scroll down. You'll see the link that says flash message. And just click on that, and you can send your message. We call it a flash message because when it arrives, a little notice starts flashing on my screen over here on the right. And but that's reserved for people outside the USA and outside of Canada. People in Canada, people in the USA, we have the telephone numbers for you. And don't tell me that you can't afford it, because I'm even paying for the call. If it's going to be long distance for you, you can use our toll-free number. In other words, if you have to pay a long-distance charge. If you're on a calling plan where you can call without it costing you extra, please, 602-539-9580. But if you have to pay long distance, I pay for the call, 888-223-4599. David, we're about, a few seconds away from our next break. We have a caller. Caller, are you willing to hang on, through the next break?
Sure.
All right, hang on, because we're just a few seconds away from it. David, one of the things that I think a lot of people will see in what we've been talking about here and what you've been describing is that, first of all, a lot of the, if you peel away all this, these layers of theology and just look at what the words actually say, in the Bible, there are things that do match what very modern science is discovering. We'll be back, folks, after this break. Don't go away.
Thank you.
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is David Cereto. We have a caller on hold. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Oh, yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario. David Cereto, it's an honor to speak with you.
Wow, Ontario. That's incredible.
Yep, North Bay, Ontario, up in the northern boonies here.
Wow.
I've been studying this thing about consciousness for a long time. Me and my father have actually both been studying consciousness and where it relates to perhaps even what is going on today. Do you think it's a possibility that there are powers, let's say, we'll call them the global elite, I guess that's what Alex Jones likes to call them, do you think that they may actually use mass consciousness as some sort of a weapon, perhaps for even more control instead of trying to suppress it? Do you think that they may use the stuff like the mainstream media, the educational system, to actually use this mass consciousness as a weapon?
Well, I think inadvertently or possibly, you know, directly, they do. I mean, by getting us to focus on their media, their films, their agenda, we're actually reinforcing it on a level that has tremendous power. I mean, William Tiller, you know, Gary Schwartz, and Cloud Swanson have also told me that it's actually possible. And I even heard a rumor that Stephen Hawking had said this, that our collective consciousness is affecting the orbits of the planets in our own solar system. Now, with all of that, the power of 6 billion people on the planet, I mean, unfortunately, we're not all focused on the global media. Most of the people don't even all watch it. And in fact, the numbers are really, really dropping. One of the largest single broadcasts in the history of the world was the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show with over 68 or so million viewers at one time. Today, CNN gets like 1.5 million viewers at one time. And part of the reason is because there are so many different channels and so much going on, so people are very scattered. But one thing that consciousness researchers have discovered is that coherency, which means everybody thinking together but also energetically harmonized with the same idea, is the greatest power. When, in fact, William Tiller used the analogy that if you could take all of the photons, the light particles and waves coming from a single light bulb, and make that light coherent, without any more power, that light could burn a hole in a steel wall. It's just that the light is not coherent. It's all scattered. So the idea of our consciousness doing the same thing would be a tremendous, tremendous power. But also, when we look at what the global elite, you know, families who own the central banks, who are responsible for this whole economic collapse, we can see with plain logic there's no shortage of what a dollar is supposed to represent, goods and services. So where's the shortage of people willing to work? Where's the shortage of goods? Where's the shortage of food that people can grow with their own hands and water? There's no shortage there. There's no shortage of land on the planet. There's a shortage in the mind, the minds of these families that want to control us and make us believe that we owe all this money, and all of this money just got lost, when it's really just a game. It's a bunch of kids playing a game with numbers. And this game is so severe that people are committing suicide and shooting their families and their children because they're so terrified. Because if you don't have money, you can't survive. We've created this paradigm with our lack of intelligence and consciousness, and we believe it. Now, in the same way that some people out there may say, well, you know, the mind, the powers of the mind sound interesting, but I don't know if I believe it. As soon as you have a thought like that, that is what Dr. Tiller says, that is a non-coherent mind. As soon as the mind has a thought and then cancels it out, it won't be able to affect the water at the distance. But when you go into a state of coherent energetics and you bond energetically and you treat water with coherent consciousness and then you separate it from yourself and then you tell the water at a distance with no doubt to do it, it does it. Exactly what Jesus said. If you have no doubt, if you remove doubt, you can move mountains with your mind. Whether that means figuratively or actually is yet to be told. But there are descriptions in the Old Testament of Bibles literally moving in the Old Testament, angels moving mountains with their consciousness. And that is the power that they don't want us. They don't want us to reach that level. And in fact, there's the famous
Catholic priest, Teilhard de Chardin, who was a physicist, believed that the next leap in human evolution, and this is in my film The Voice, is yet to come, that we're not finished yet. The next leap in evolution is called the noosphere, and the noosphere is when we realize that as a sphere, a spherical consciousness and community of human beings, that if we all think together globally to attain positive goals, to eliminate these challenges, that this power as a planetary sphere in total coherence would be our next evolution as a species, as a biological species.
Now, he was, Teilhard de Chardin was pretty severely attacked by the Roman Catholic Church, was he not?
Well, you know, the Roman Catholic Church seems to attack everyone, and then, you know, generations later they become saints. And they like turning them into saints once they're dead.
So maybe he'll be a saint someday.
Yeah,
all right, let's
go
back to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, good evening, Kevin. This is Kevin from Northern Alberta calling.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am well. How about yourself?
Doing well, sir. Thank you.
What an excellent program tonight. I wanted to ask David if he had has any plans for mass consciousness in getting any experiments done in that manner himself.
Well, first of all, I want to say what an amazing coherent experience we're having right now. We have a host named Kevin. We just had a Kevin call from Ontario, and now we have a Kevin calling from Northern Alberta. And I was born in Alberta. So
that is a coincidence. How long ago did you leave?
That's a coherence. It's not a coincidence, it's a coherence. But
okay,
my plan is that, yes, I would like to arrange. Well, you know, by the time we reach 2010, I think there are arguments at NASA about whether the solar flares are going to start in 2010 or 2011, and definitely in 2012. When we get to that point, I would like to do a huge radio show circuit and pick a date where we can actually cohere and create a global meditation to meditate on the sun. And I think that's something that I'll be planning when we start, you know, getting a little bit into 2010.
Do you have a website, David, where you convey information to your fans?
Well, I have a voiceentertainment.net. On the internet is where Quantum Communication, my DVD, and my other films are, and where I can receive emails from people. And you can also sign up there to become, you know, to come on my email list and receive updates and that sort of thing.
Well, I thank you kindly.
So you're in Northern Alberta. How far north of Calgary and Edmonton are you?
Oh, just a little bit outside of Edmonton, actually.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's where I was born in 1961. Yeah, we moved to Berkeley.
In 61, well, how long did you stay in Edmonton for?
Well, we moved to, my dad was getting his PhD in psychology at Berkeley in 64, 65, so we moved then, my four brothers, my mom and I. So I've gone back and forth.
Oh, well, that's good to know. Yeah, it's a beautiful country, especially further north.
Oh, yeah, the fishing up there is spectacular.
Kevin, I want to thank you for the call. And interesting questions. I would love to be able to get up there and do some fishing. I love to fish, but it's been a very long time since Kevin from Phoenix has had the opportunity to go fishing.
You know, Kevin, I went to buy a fishing rod the other day, and I almost got everything. I haven't gone fishing since I was a kid. And then I was told that I needed a trout license, and then I said, well, are there any real trout in the streams? And they said all of them are farm-raised trout, and they're fed into the stream. So there's no such thing as true wild trout anywhere anymore. So I gave them back the license, gave them back the fishing rod, and I said, I drove home, and I just couldn't believe it. We have destroyed the ecology so much that there's no such thing as a real trout anymore. I'm going to have to go to northern Canada if I want to catch a real trout.
Oh, that's sad.
It's really sad.
All right, folks, the telephone line is open, and the telephone number is 602-539-9580, or toll-free 888-223-4599. 888-223-4599. If you have a question or a comment, use those telephone numbers to call in. They will work from anywhere in the world. However, they are not toll-free from everywhere in the world. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Don calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Don.
How you doing tonight?
Good.
Hi, David.
Hi.
Yeah, I don't know if you recall or not. There was I was listening to some old Art Bell shows, and Art Bell at one time, he was mentioning that he once did an experiment with mass consciousness where they were controlling the weather, and he said it worked so well that it scared him, that he stopped doing it because he felt like they did not know what they were doing. They didn't want to do anything that was causing harm.
That's true. I remember this story. There was a fire in Salmon Arm, British Columbia, where I've actually planted trees before for a living, and they couldn't put this fire out. It was just a drought. I mean, it was just devouring, you know, hundreds of miles of forest. And Art Bell, at that time, had around 10 to 15 million listeners, and he assembled them all to make it rain in Salmon Arm. And it rained the next day, and they put the fire out very quickly. And he became very, very terrified because he thought, if I cause an effect over here in nature and I put out this fire here, I'm taking water or, you know, I'm causing something else to happen somewhere else. And he didn't want to mess with nature. He was afraid of it. But later they did it again when I believe it was Richard Hoagland had some kind of a health event happen to him. I can't remember whether it was the heart or it was the brain, a possible stroke or something like that, and everybody prayed for Richard to heal, and he did. And so this shows you how powerful even 10 or 15 million people can be in a collective consciousness experiment.
We did the same thing with Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith had a stroke here a couple years ago, and everybody just, you know, I sent out an email to everybody, a newsletter, and plus all his listeners heard about it, and, you know, I don't know what Kevin Smith's listening base is. He's in over 95 countries, but he had a massive stroke, and Kevin completely recovered.
Wow.
That is the truth.
Afterwards. So, yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what mass consciousness can do.
Well, radio is better than television right now because we spend so much time on these shows and quality time with the audience and the listeners. And I'm really amazed how the numbers on these kind of shows are growing and triumphing over a lot of the ratings on even TV shows. And I think it's because of the quality of the host and the quality of the research, and the audience is hungry and interested in greater detail reporting, you know, of stories in general, you know, not just, you know, paranormal things. And I think there's a lack of that in the mainstream media. And now we can see, you're right. I mean, the power, everybody has known about the power of prayer. But when you get, you know, hundreds of thousands to millions of people praying together, there's no doubt you create a coherence.
All right. We have to step away for a break. And we will be back right after this, folks. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is David Cereda, and boy, are we hitting some heavy subjects here tonight. David, by the way, folks, we'll open the telephone line for one or two more calls here in just a moment, but we have a message from Nigel in the United Kingdom, and he says, is there such a thing as a positive universe and a negative universe, and is that the way to tune in to interdimensional frequencies or to do mind over matter?
Well, in Claude Swanson, MIT physicist's book, The Synchronized Universe, which you can find on Amazon, people, he describes
multiple levels of the universe or multiverses, which have now been discovered. Even string theory predicts nine-dimensional universe or more right now. What causes us to see this reality and experience it as solid is that our minds and our collective consciousness is coherently in agreement in an observer-observed relationship. And he actually mathematically calculates this, that the photons and the electrons and the atoms in our bodies are in alignment in phase with the photons, which are light particles that allow us to perceive all this. As soon as the coherency in our body changes to an alternative reality, you can start to see other dimensions, which is something that's been happening to me since 1994. I wake up in the middle of the night and there are beings around me. There are some of them that are known that used to live on the earth, and there are others that are clearly spherical and different shapes and very colorful and bright from other dimensions. And we live in a multidimensional universe. In these, you know, invisible cameras, as we were talking about earlier, and invisible detection systems are now verifying that that is a fact and that there is communication going on in many dimensions, sight and sound. Energetic and presence, you can actually detect this. So in a way, you know, to answer the caller's question, is there a positive and negative universe? I don't think it's so black and white. I think there's many dimensions of the universe, and we are co-participants in the observations and the manifestation of to confirm what we believe and what we think in our own reality. I mean, we even create our civilizations, our universities, and the limitations on thought in our universities, and we reinforce that there are only four dimensions in space-time and that you can only perceive this much of reality and there's no such thing as more than this. But when we look in the ancient past, and the examples you gave of Moses were excellent, and there are many other examples, we can see stories that may appear as myth to us today, but as science starts to catch up with ancient knowledge, we're going to find out that we'll be able to do these things in the future and confirm what the ancient civilizations knew. We do live in a multidimensional universe.
All right. We have time for probably just one more call, but the telephone number is 602-539-9580 or 888-223-4599. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. Like I said, if you can make the call, if you're on a calling plan where it doesn't cost you long distance, please call us on 602-539-9580. If you need the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. David, we've got maybe 5 or 6 minutes left here before we have to close out the show. Kind of sum this up for us. I mean, this is amazing information, but if I were to say to you, okay, it is amazing, but so what? What would you answer?
Well, I would say that if a person says so what, then they're just not ready personally to develop themselves. I mean, even if you're an architect or you're a musician, ask yourself, where do new concepts and design come from? Where is the creative force coming from? Where does the new song come from? And if you want to become better at what you do, to become more successful at what you do, you have to develop the faculties of your mind and expand your creative abilities, whether you're a physicist, a doctor, or anything to survive in this world competitively. You have to become better than the other guy. And I ask you, if you want to become better, then open your mind to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see quantum communication. If you don't, and you just want to, you know, stay exactly where you are, and you don't want anything to challenge your reality, that's fine with me. You know, you can do that.
That's sort of like deciding to stay on a sinking ship, though. All right, we need to go to the telephone for our last call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Tony from Alberta.
Hi, Tony.
How are you?
Good.
We've got Alberta again. That's incredible.
Yeah. What is your question, Tony?
Well, I was just wondering, have you heard about Dr. Horwicks? He's talking about doing 26 cities. 528 hertz, and he's going to do music, and it's supposed to affect water all over the planet?
Oh, yeah, I know Dr. Len Horowitz, and his live H2 events are coming up, and
yes,
we have a movie
right.
called...
What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a great idea. I mean, this is part of a global coherence initiative to get people to synchronize and to focus on a frequency and vibration of the human heart to bring people into a collective energetic field. I mean, I can't wait to see what the results are and what happens.
Yes, and I believe entirely in what you're talking about because I've had that experience because I had two leaking valves and I was at a prayer group we belonged to and they prayed over me. And the day before that, I'd gone to the doctor and I still had these leaking valves. And then on the Monday, I went back and he did a scope on me and they were gone. We completely healed and it's been healed ever since.
And no remission.
And no remission, right. It was just power of prayer.
Wow.
It was unbelievable.
I consider it
a miracle. Yes. So I experienced that. And I've always thought, you know, what you're talking about, I believe in that completely. And I've been trying to push that. But most people think that I've lost my mind when I talk about it.
Yeah, you know more than they do at this point. I mean, so, you know, they're just not ready to receive that. And maybe, you know, in some ways it's a blessing when these challenges come upon us and then we engage the power of collective prayer, you heal, and now your mind goes to another level. When they're ready for it, they will step in.
Tony, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. We're almost out of time. I'm really fascinated. We've only got like a minute left here, but I'm fascinated with something I read on your blog that said you've got a new project coming up called Mona Lisa's Little Secret.
Well, actually, I'm redoing the film because we have new information, but that DVD is also available at voiceentertainment.net right now, and that we could do a whole show on that, Kevin. That's quite a subject.
You know, what I read on your site said if you thought Dan Brown's information and you know, in the Da Vinci Code, if you thought that was amazing, just hang on to your hat until you see Mona Lisa's Little Secret. So I am truly on the hook. I've got to get it. I want to see it. And,
well, I'll give you a copy of it in May here in Sedona, and for anybody who wants to come and see me at the conference, well, you know, it starts, I think, May 22nd, and we'll see you there.
All right. Sounds fantastic. Folks, we're the conference he's talking about, I'll be speaking there. He's there. Lots of other people are going to be there, names that you know, and it's May 22nd, 23rd, 24th. And you've been seeing the ads and hearing the ads here on this show. You need to go over to UFOSkyWatch.com and make your reservations, UFOSkyWatch.com. It's going to be a power hitters conference, I think. I want to thank you for being with us. And if you will, just stay on the line with me for a minute, David. I want to speak with you for just a moment after we get off of the show. But very quickly, if you will, tell us your website again.
My website is voiceentertainment.net and lulu.com/David Sarita is another site where I have my ebook.
All right. Thank you so much. Stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap. And we'll be back tomorrow night with another great show. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.